So he gets close to the Dobbs ESP world. So he's the Bob Dobbs of ESP. And what would be conversational jousting, Carolyn? What's the Frank Zappa of conversational jousting?
Crossfire.
Yeah, you can think of that. How was he on that?
How was who?
Zappa.
Oh, well, yeah, he can joust and out-crossfire anybody.
Right, so McLuhan was like that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was saying. So it was a good metaphor. The Franks have a conversational jealousy because nobody would know McLuhan was like that unless they saw the YouTubes. But people know Frank from his Crossfire appearances.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know music, but they know him on Crossfire. He had a bit of a name for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that worked. So I think that there was that point, and there was another point. Anybody notice any other synchronicities or something in what was said?
At the end, where you were close to being on the Lou Dobbs explanation of how you were close to going on 60 Minutes and
now,
upsetting
that is
the whole
fucking bullshit. See how fucking ridiculous I am? He almost makes such outrageous statements to show you, Bob. We're making shit up, Bob. Yeah, 60 Minutes. We're listening to Cashflow back in 2009, and Bob's profound 55 Minutes with the numbskull James Martinez just was shaking up the whole news world. Yes, and Lou Dobbs knew that I knew something that he didn't know, and he told the guy at 60 Minutes, and they said, we're going to have to do an item on him, and then we got to destroy him. They were going to destroy my reputation, Carolyn.
What reputation?
And you hear earlier, I had done say, well, Bob, we were talking about Ion showing up or something. You said, well, Bob, you're the perfect guy. Nobody takes you seriously. Did you hear that one, Carolyn? This is so Jesus-like. Mark Stolman gets very mad that I claim I'm Jesus, but this is Jesus-like. Well, once it all gets proven to be true, they're going to say how clever Bob was. Yeah, he put up with being a fucking numbskull. His popular image was, like, very bad. And he, like a saint, lived with it. Didn't fight it. See, that's Christ-like right there, right? None of you fuckers would do that.
That's like the other two Jesus. The other two Jesuses that didn't get crucified, that's the ones you mean, right?
Oh, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, no, I meant the dumb one, but that's all that Mark knows. The other, you can't beat the other two. They didn't go public. They were smart. See, I fucked up. I went public. But I knew not to be serious. No, I'm not doing anything. I'm not going about my father's business. I'm just here hanging out with the hoi polloi. Just to keep them entertained.
You're here spouting off amazing things, and no one it's in the guise of complete absurdity, so no one pays attention to it.
Right. And, you know, I have to give the Aries credit. They may be whack jobs or something Ion doesn't understand, but they did tell me about 1989, 1990 that the fact that you're seen as connected to the church subgenius, Bob, will serve you well. They told me. That's good. Good what you aligned yourself with there. So they knew. You have to give Carolyn credit, too. You know, she had to watch her husband be pilloried for 50 years, and she put up like a good, strong, married Todd Lincoln, a very nice lady who didn't care what the people said about her husband. Right.
So now what?
I'm even made fun of with Ion by Ion. We're only here for Carol and Bob. You're just visiting. That's often said.
Visiting.
So that was quite a story.
Yes.
So it's interesting. Also, Ion talking about feeling places and
right.
about JW having feeling places, and then how compassion came into play because
on our part
on his part, because he made huge adjustments in his physical to be able to accommodate you, Bob, to be able to go to the beach.
Yeah, but it's important. I said if I didn't accommodate, no, I would have accommodated to him. I said if it was only once every week, then I'd be fine with that.
Yes,
that's when he says compassion.
There was.
Yes, Bob, you had compassion.
Yes.
You would have done what JW was comfortable
You would have
with
done it. Yeah.
But the thing about Ion, about JW, there's a whole shit there I censored. He went into quite depth about JW.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very accurate or, you know, amazing what he knows about JW. And, but, you know, we have a rule not really to expose much about JW, so I deleted that. But they are saying that JW is used to... Oh, that was very interesting how he ran the fucking Abrahams for a while.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if he'd like that out. That's being put out there. But we did anyways. I figured all this stuff was so old.
Mm-hmm.
And our lockdown is so definite that we're in charge now. We can release the secret files.
And then it was interesting how when you were reading about... You were quoting about Ion saying about you guys, we are just now coming to a place of resolution. And then Ion said it was the tactile interplay between human, I don't know if I missed a word there, human and human creativity. So I thought
human
that
creation.
Was pretty.
Between human and human creation, which is our technology.
Oh, creation, okay. Oh,
I'm pretty sure he said creation. Yeah, same thing. And, we're resolving. Now, coming to a resolution, Carolyn, that's after 10,000 years of my plan, Opinel's plan. So I ain't even got that in there.
Mm-hmm.
We're resolving
and then that's
all
when
the
they went into
headaches.
And then that's when they veered into the whole Resolute Desk thing.
Yeah.
It was interesting.
Yes, when I first started to listen to it, I said, oh, this is interesting. They're going to explain the first few words. Then it went into this whole thing about the Queen and Star Wars. That was, oh, wow. I didn't know we'd be doing that.
Yeah.
So.
But it was still the Queen Mother running the show. Queen Mother.
And it's so ridiculous. This lady who was like drunk on gin all the time was doing everything. This is highly unlikely.
He was drunk all the time.
She had three gins or something by the time of August 4th, 2:30 in the afternoon, gin and tonic. And I'm not an alcoholic. I don't know drinks. What Bert?
Within 50, because if it was during the phone call with Reagan, the phone call took 58 minutes, so she had three gin and tonics.
Before it started. Because she was hovering over it. She was very nervous. She didn't want her power revealed, but they had to do it. Now, this syncs totally with what was going on. That is McLuhan's marriage day, August 4th, 1982. And that is leading up to the Battle of the Harvest Moon, where me and Beater saved the world in September 17th, 2 months later. But there were other things going on in other dimensions. According to bullshit Ion, Ion trying to take credit away from me and Beater. That was a whole attempt for him to claim that his team did it, Carol, not me and Beater. We stopped the nuclear first strike in September 82, and the Queen had an audience, or Beater had an audience with the Queen. You know, she knew he was important. So, but it was very tense that summer in 82. The economy had totally collapsed. Farmers were killing themselves. It was really a bad year. And got resolved slightly in September 17th, 1982. So there's, you know, Ion is talking about the tension of that year right there in that session.
Okay, and then Ion was saying that it was like, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, finish.
You finish then.
I was going to say that was what was alluded to there was that it was going to be another world war, that's what the Queen Mother was avoiding.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the only reason she
That was not in the public. That was not in the
Yes, it was.
That was not
That's
known.
What,
the Falkland.
Okay,
Falkland
well, here's what you do. You go into the online, get the Dr. Beter tape summaries, start off the January one where Haig made a statement. I remember it was January 25th, 82. He was the Rockefeller faction, and he was trying to cut off the Bolshevik plan for nuclear war one that was started like a year before in the late 81, and Haig made a move, and then he ended up having to quit or resign. But you read through.
Alexander Haig?
Yeah, yeah. So oh, all okay. the way through, he like resigns in June, and he's the Rockefeller guy. They get rid of him. The Bolsheviks are in total control. So you read those texts, long sessions, about what was coming in later 82. You know, it was very bad year in politics and all kinds of levels. It was sort of like, you know, the way North Korea was before Trump had his meeting. You know, everybody's worried about 4 months ago that we were going to have a war with North Korea. Well, that's the way it was. And there was the Falklands War in April 82. That was a big deal. Britain had to go south and stop Argentina taking over these nothing islands, you know. And
why was that such a big deal?
Well, you have to read Beter. I actually can't remember right now, but no, there was lots of little flare-ups all through 82 leading to the big one. Now, I've told you that our foster daughter, Shannon, and her friend, Anna, what was her name, Carol? Anna? Uh-huh. They were cowering in the afternoon of September 1782. I was out somewhere. So I came home to Carol's, to our home at 22 Kenwood for historians to go and, you know, turn into a heritage place, 22 Kenwood in Toronto. And Carol's got her practice on the first floor. We live upstairs. And I walked by the extra patient room on the first floor, and there's Anna and Shannon hugging each other. I said, what's going on? They said, well, you said this is the day we blow up. They were waiting to be blown up. They really believed it. How old were they? They were 16
because you
or
said that?
17.
17.
Yeah, they knew the Beter prediction. And I had forgotten that they'd known it. So I was ruining my kid's life.
As usual.
As usual. Unaware of my effects. And so, you know, you could get Shannon on here someday and talk about that day. I mean, it was quite traumatic for her.
Yeah.
Her quote, father had said, well, we're all going on that day. And so she told her friend Anna, so they came over and prepared to die at 22 Kenwood.
So you forgot to tell her, oh, no, I saved that. I saved the world.
Yeah, well, that only happened a few hours earlier. That only happened a few hours earlier. And so, yes, I was not cognizant. I was living ahead of myself or behind myself or just oblivious as usual, and which is the way you solve everything, just be oblivious to it. You put your hand up, Carol?
My hand is up. Okay, here's the update on Esther Hicks. I looked her up to see if she was still at work, and right this moment, she's on an Alaska cruise with her group of friends on, she calls it the Vortex of Attraction Cruise, and she signs her little invitation to come on the cruise, our love, Esther, and then brackets, and Abraham and Jerry. So she's channeling Jerry now as well as the Abrahams.
You suspect that's what it means.
Yeah. Yeah, so she's still out there cruising.
Ignoring my wisdom.
Yeah.
Ignoring what you can learn from Ion.
Mm-hmm.
Next thought.
So another interesting thing was about how Ion said the Queen Mother was really good at knowing intention, and that knowing intention means you don't know time.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's a result of no time. You know, you can see everything.
Mm-hmm. And that was what, after you commented that you saw a documentary and it was when the Reagans were being, had gone to.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean,
and,
I didn't know that they weren't at Balmoral. I didn't know where they were. But it turns out he says they're at Buckingham Palace, but he was bullshitting the whole story, so who knows. But I did see the video, and she was inhumanly uncharacteristically, unaristocratically staring into this guy's face with a knowing gleam. And he just didn't see the formal face. It was the private face. And you never saw that before, but there it was. And I remember telling you, Carolyn, about it. I told people about this. Holy shit. She's that queen. There's something different about her. Mm-hmm. And, the videotape enhances more than you realize. It shows yourself on TV.
Maybe she was starstruck with the Ronald Reagan, the actor.
I don't know. In my mind, she was talking to Reagan, but I don't know if it was. No. It was an intense sharing. You know, she was really into the communication they were sharing. Very, very keen looking. Mm. Not being royal. Not being an impersonal empress. So, that's what I saw. And of course, what I saw was what my non-physical wanted me to see, so I'd bring it up later when the session happened. Mm-hmm. That I would understand what I was saying, because I had that experience.
Right. Wow.
So, yes.
That was a pretty amazing fiction.
Yeah, one of the better Bob bedtime story. Wonderful story.
Also, his fiction description of how she reappears to Queen Elizabeth and other people. And they talk to her as if she's still around. That's a interesting.
No, she doesn't appear to Queen Elizabeth, only to Charles Rutherford. Now look that up. Oh, you'll find there's no such footman named Charles Rutherford. So that'll be more bullshit. Yeah, but it's interesting how Ion, on the fabulous level of Ion, where he's telling a fable which he wants us to make into a movie, he takes the one harmless person in the world, the queen and her mother, and makes them the giants of the whole world for 100 years. I mean, that's Ionic fiction, man. I mean, no one thinks about the queen in that way. She's like a big blind spot. Nobody thinks about her.
Well, the other interesting thing was that Victoria is apparently pretty powerful.
No slouch.
And but also
she was trying to overthrow the United States, which is what you can read about in LaRouche's books about how she was conspiring to use the South to whoop Burton and his buddies up there in Baltimore.
But it was interesting that he went on to say about her husband, Prince Albert, was the one
that he was
really
a knowing guy.
He was the knowing guy. He was the knowing guy.
And, he dies early.
Yep.
He spent many years without a husband.
He's from Germany. He's from Germany.
The whole family was. They were Germans. Do you know in World War I, they had to drop
their name
from Battenberg or something to Mount Batten. They had to get rid of the German meaning of their word, which is kind of crazy, right? As if no one noticed. Oh, they changed their name. Oh, they're not German anymore? Nope. We're supposed to forget that. Don't everybody bring up the fact they were German.
Bob, they changed it to Windsor.
Oh, okay. All right. But Lord Mountbatten was the residue of it. He kept his name. That's why they killed him in 79. He got killed, got shot, murdered.
Wasn't Mountbatten Prince Philip's uncle?
Probably. I mean, he might have been Charles's uncle. He was related to the Queen, I think. He's probably like the Queen's brother or the Queen's uncle.
Oh, they're all related,
son.
Right.
They're all fucked up.
I think they were cousins because they were the dot. He was the son of one of Queen Victoria's, offspring.
Right. So the deal is that when we get together with the Queen, I'm just going to have to keep my mouth shut. I can't say nothing. I can't indicate anything that I know or that would be a little too untoward. It was the only time I met somebody and didn't say a word.
Is that why you know the symbols? Because when you were president, And then Elizabeth shared the symbols with you?
Yes, I actually fuck with the things. I took the symbols and put phony ones in there so that Bush and them have been lousy presidents ever since. So we have a whole other one to play, similarly just over an hour long, but we have to do the Connie bit now. We have to do McLuhan. So let's see if anybody wanted to say anything.
We don't have to do it.
Yes, we do. Yep. You're not getting off with that. Sean says, Bob's Fairy Tales, twice upon a no time. Leon, really big, really big. Laundry Matt. I think that refers to Matt Hurtado, Matthew Hurtado. He was our laundry mat. Sean says, wow, all of a sudden marvelous wonders are wrought. Sean believed it.
In her country.
In what? In her country. What is Sarah? Sarah goes on typing Finneganese, typing a different language pronouncing words.
Yeah.
So, Bert, you said something about the music is DNA. That's DNA music, y'all. Did you mean the religious song at that time?
Yeah, the Vestal Lighthouse.
Yeah, yeah. You were moved by it.
Yes.
So, Bert, so Carolyn can slowly get ready. What discoveries did you make? So I think I asked you to go back and look at the Jerry Fialka stuff. Sound like you did.
Yes, I did. I was quite amazed to go back and listen, hear to what you were saying 25 years ago. And I would say you were Ofenel Hobad back then, what you were talking about.
Yeah.
That's when you were Ofenel Hobad. There were so many thoughts that you were throwing out. February 1993, it took me almost a day and a half to listen to, because I'm working and like I'm doing my new setup now. I'm not doing it Word. I'm doing it on my phone, but I'm listening and I have to go back. I have to go back and make little notes, you know, on my phone, because it's like, Bob, it's so full of thoughts of what came through from Ion as well. I mean, let me give you one. Give me just one. What's a good one? Oh, you said we're going to go beyond electricity.
I said that? Wow.
Yes, you did. And then...
You wowed yourself.
It wasn't me.
Ofenel.
Ofenel, and then Jerry said, well, when? He said, well, 500 years from now, we're going to be so integrated. Everybody will be integrated. Everybody will have ESP and will know everything all the time. And that makes me think of Ion talking about engaging the cloud, and everybody will know everything.
Yeah, right. And I'm saying all that stuff. 500 years, I think I'm thinking of the final Armageddon that Evering said would happen in 500 years, where we'd have this technology we could use, but if we do it, we'd forget everything we ever knew. I think I had the 500, my conscious mind, you know, maybe Ofenel meant it other ways, but my conscious mind was thinking of, well, we know something dramatic is going to happen in 500 years, so that's why I said that.
Yeah, and I mean, I would recommend everyone, if they're interested, to go back and listen, because it'll blow your mind. I mean, you and Carolyn were talking about, I remember you shared the Evergreens about the Boodians changing the thumb, but then you and Carolyn were talking about how the flexibility of the hand created language.
Right.
Which was, I was like, wow. I mean, that's
the wrist.
How it changed. Yeah, the wrist and the thumb, how it changed the whole, activated something in the brain.
Right,
and then that's
because
how language was created.
Part of the wrist was it was able to get different foods, I think, and that changed the body chemistry, which affected the brain.
Yes. And that had me reflect
on
Ion. Ion in the jaw. That's right. Yes, the jaw and the thumb, the wrist. Ion talked about me with the muscles that non-physical is located in the forearm, the special muscle in the forearm.
Okay. Non-physical is in the forearm.
With the wrist. In the wrist. In the wrist, the forearm, the muscles. So that when I heard that, I was like, wow, that's a connecting point. But
Then which reminds me. Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, you go ahead.
There's something Ion said on the session that indicated what they knew, that they knew stuff. It was some local knowledge. They say the name. Can't remember what it was, but it was an example of Ion knowing secular knowledge. And something was said, and they said, yes, that's blah, 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 and they knew what it was. I can't remember right now. So back to you.
Yeah, what it is, and then I went to the March 1993, and I'm not even finished that. That is really, I mean, I think that's about maybe 8 or 9 hours. I'm like on part 6.
8 or 9 hours of videotape?
Yeah. Yes. There was sections.
Holy.
It's like 6 parts. And Friday, I just went and looked at, see how many hours it was, and I calculated about maybe close to 7 or 8 hours. But I'm on part 6, and that was really full. I mean, it's
now here's what's a joke. I'm saying all this to a homeless guy who let me crash at his place. Jerry, semi-homeless. Very
That's he's a buddy
of Jerry on what?
Corbin. He's buddy of isn't he a buddy of Corbin? Corbin Connect.
I only met semi-homeless guys through Jerry. That was the whole gang there. We used to call Club 14. As opposed to Toronto, it was Club 22. And I'm interviewed. You know, you've got the fat guy, Mark Free, that interview. You've got Tom Brennan, Jerry, and Phil Chamberlain. He was really homeless. And so all of them were just barely had some job, had some cheap living conditions, and hung out in Venice Beach and sneered at the rich people. In Hollywood, you know, that's Bob as Jesus, Carolyn, with Carolyn there as part of it. That was the new thing. We were a duo. Jesus had his Mary, and we hung out with the lowlife the way Jesus is supposed to hang out in the bars and taverns. You know what I mean? It was very bad what Jesus did in the social. Well, that's what I was doing. I was hanging out with the nuts. They were all smart, funny, great guys, but they had no status anywhere and nothing. Jerry worked for Zappa, but, you know, he was, Zappa was someone you shouldn't work for, you know? No work for Zappa. What? Oh, he was banned from radio and everything. I mean, he was considered a bad guy. So only the smart people knew it was significant, but for most people, it wasn't significant.
Mm-hmm.
Phil Chamberlain, he lived in a garage, and the front garage door, there was no garage door, so he had 1,000 paperbacks piled up to be the door. Remember that, Carol?
Uh-huh.
His door, there was no door in this garage that somebody let him sleep in, so he took a pile of abandoned used books and made a wall to fill in the door for the garage door.
Yeah, one day we made a boat out of empty water and milk containers.
Right.
And floated it down the canal.
The Venice Canal. Well, this is where we were total saints. Here's Carolyn getting ready to go to Toronto, to New York to treat AIDS successfully and hanging out with Bob's world, this low-life world of hobos, and yet they were the best people to hang out with. They were the most fun, and they would have their bench at the beach and mock everybody who walked by. You know?
In a nice way.
In a nice way. They would discuss things with everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was the bete noir of the group. Half of them didn't like me, and the other did like me, but nobody understood me, and I was saying stuff that Bert's watching. I'm saying all this incredible stuff to Jerry in a back alley of North America.
Mm.
It's priceless. It's the stuff of legend, right? Here's Bob giving his predicting Ion. He's looking at a dingy, dirty apartment, a little house, little tiny house, so dusty. You know,
it was clean dust.
You know what? What was it? Because you know what happened when we went back. Okay, you had to go to. You went there in June and stayed there through June, July. Then came back. Then went back in August. Mm-hmm. And then on August 12th, Walter died. So that meant I had to come to New York. But I went to Toronto on the way to see what Paul and his girlfriend Avril were doing, because mm-hmm. they were looking after a house. Well, I visited a person, I won't say who, and at their home, and also maybe at where the person worked. A couple of years later, he told me that I totally stunk. My clothes stunk.
Yeah.
I didn't know it. And he said it was incredible. You know, he knew we had lived in a very nice place in Toronto, and he wouldn't associate us with me like smelling like a homeless guy, but apparently I did.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't know it. But I remember once he told me, I said, well, that's because I was staying in Jerry's stinky place
uh-huh.
for 6 months, and it's sunny California. It's like you're half living outside, like in a tent. So you got used to your body smell. You didn't even know you stunk, right? And remember, we cleaned out his dusty archives.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I cleaned out these dusty archives for weeks. Every Saturday, we would take another box down. He had a huge archive, dusty, dusty stuff. And I wasn't changing my clothes much. So whatever I had was totally...
But he had laundry there.
He would do laundry, yeah. But I think the house had a moldy smell.
Oh, yes.
And that would have gotten into my clothes in the long run.
Yeah.
So that was interesting that I got on the airplane, I flew, I was hanging out with Paul, and I had this stink coming off me. I didn't know it. But that's because I'd been doing my job down in the boondocks, laying out these great recordings. So you have to think, when I'm being recorded by Jerry in those 93 videotapes, I stink like high heaven there. Or high hell. I don't know. Is it high heaven? Hog heaven? Oh, must be hog heaven.
And this is a guy that takes 3 showers a day.
Well, no, I took a shower in the morning and when I went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I did one in the morning. Definitely did one before I went to bed. But the shower was all moldy. Remember that?
Right. Okay, let's not talk about
it. We had to wipe it down. After your shower, you had to wipe the water off, and I refused to. So Jerry would always be there wiping the shower down after I used it.
You refused.
I couldn't be bothered. That was too much work.
What about ayahuasca being used in vape pens by 15-year-olds?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I saw that.
Oh, my gosh.
This generation, those kids are so stupid.
Yes.
But they are apparently not being affected.
Look at them. They don't want sex and they don't want driver's licenses. They are being affected. That's what it said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They're living in a whole different world.
They must be. Bert, you've met one of them. I'm not looking forward to meeting any of these young men from the millennial generation or younger. They're so basket cased.
Well, I've met a couple. You met one, and he's not the typical.
No, I'm talking about these typical jerks.
Yeah, we don't know too.
Every generation is cursed, says McLuhan, and these are the cursed ones. The idiots, they're 14 and they got to be hip and they got to smoke fucking DMT and not do their homework and figure out how to become a dope dealer. They're very bad people, bad scumbags.
I love the article about it. It says, compared to anything else, the psychedelic drug DMT is nuts. As
right.
The UFC is to a toddler slap fight, as Niagara is to a bath, so DMT is to marijuana. Plus, the Challenger disaster, your first orgasm, and electroshock therapy all mixed together.
That's where I saw UHF, Carolyn. Remember?
UFC. UFC, the fight.
Is that what it says there?
UFC, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I saw on... Houston's t-shirt. I saw it the other day, and I said, I've seen that somewheres. And then they told me it was the store or something. UFC is a store, but that's what they're referring to there, right? UFC.
I don't know.
No, UFC is the kickboxing.
It's a kickboxing.
Ultimate fighting challenge. Ultimate fighting challenge.
Oh, so that's what you're reading, Carol?
Yeah, UFC is a fight club.
And that wasn't what... Houston had another letter. UFG or something.
Well, let's look. UFC is a clothing company.
Oh, so they both fit.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I saw, and I remember I said, I've seen that somewhere, and I just saw it in the article, I guess. Yeah, well, so, yes, I'm not looking forward to my new clients that come from the, you know, the vappy, the vape smoking fucking.
Well, and you know what's interesting, Bob, with those vape pens? They're electronically ignited.
Mm. What's that mean?
Mm-hmm.
What's the significance of that?
Well, it's electricity that's making the making them burn.
Turning it on.
Smoke.
Right. Is that one of those things that people smoke to smoke?
Yes.
Yeah.
Steam.
Mm-hmm.
They got
steam
coming out of their mouth.
Oh, smoke.
That's a vape pen.
Or steam. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just the water vapor.
And that's electrically activated on the smoke one.
Mm-hmm.
The cigarette one.
Yeah, yes.
Apparently. And then he continues, so you'd think smoking DMT would be a whole big ordeal, an epic adventure, a huge event. After all, the trip on the DMT-containing tea, ayahuasca, which is actually the training wheels version of smoked DMT, users often drive or fly to a remote location, do a ritual diet, are guided by a shaman who's been trained for generations before spending a few days integrating DMT, though. Kids are smoking it at parties. Kids vape it in their car after school. If you cultivate an awareness of the odor, it's like grandma's burned shea carpet. And when we say kids, we mean kids, 15 to 17-year-olds. One regular user said, I used to like to smoke it before school. And then he started manufacturing it in his basement at 17. It's a real pick-me-up. It's amazing.
Well, it's just more stupidity.
How we adapt. It's a human adaptation.
No, it's more stupidity. The juvenile delinquents always have to do something to fuck up their generation.
Mm-hmm.
They should be good little boys and girls. But no. They all get sick and die by the time of the 35.
Yeah.
Useless jerks.
Yeah, we're going.
And then the dumb girls will like them. The dumb girls will like them, or even worse.
Okay, Bob, let's do McClune. You're getting maudlin.
I'm getting pissed off at humans again.
Yeah.
Getting all worked up. Calm down, Bob. Calm down.
Yeah, yeah. Ion, when the Ion starts lying, I get pissed off.
The fact DMT is tentacling into everyday lives probably has to do with a heightened tolerance for bizarreness. Now that everything is so apeshit all the time, at least according to the internet, a regular dab sesh or day drunk just doesn't cut it. We need to be totally shocked out of our minds in order to feel like a soldier ripping off a toenail, to feel something besides the inanity and cruelty of war, which is how regular people feel now after they've spent more than 5 hours reading Twitter.
What was it? Say that last bit again. They, something before the Twitter, they feel, what was it?
We need to be totally shocked out of our minds in order to feel, comma, like a soldier ripping off a toenail, to feel something besides the inanity and cruelty of war, comma.
War, comma, da?
Comma.
And besides the inanity of war?
Yeah, and cruelty of war, comma, which is how regular people feel now after they've spent more than 5 hours reading Twitter.
They feel like they've been in the cruelty of war?
Yeah, or ripped off their toenails.
They can't feel.
Yeah, so they have to push it to DMT.
Yep. So there it was in Jerry's
fault.
I was warning everybody back there 25 years ago. Yeah, it's Trump's fault. Yeah, we should tempted to play some of that stuff, but no, it's up there on Ed's site. Anybody can hear it.
What stuff?
My pontifications as Opinel.
Uh-huh.
Oh, I mean, it's pretty... I mean... what was it? I think Roxy once said, she went back and heard something I was saying way back there, and she said, If I had heard that back then, I would have thought you were fucking nuts. Completely insane. I was considered insane. And look at how happy I am there, being insane there, Bert. They're all quite concise, grammatically correct, correcting Jerry's interpretation of me. I was on point all the time, right? I was the only guy not drunk. Yeah.
Very, very serious. You even said, had a comment about the homeless. You said that the homeless are imitating the Brahmins of old. So now the homeless are the homeless in America are showing the Oriental, what you say, Orientalizing of
Oriental,
America.
Yeah. Yeah. The West goes east and the East goes west. And we got the, you know, the wandering beggars of India here in North America.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's really funny is my lecture to them in Dobbstown.com, August in 2007 or 2008. It's the time I was doing dialogues with Corbin. And Jerry put on one of his benefits, which he's the entertainment director for the homeless of Venice Beach. So they all come out. And so what am I going to say to one up these anarchists, you know, these DMT wannabes? Well, you'll hear it. This, Bob Marshall said it's one of my best performances ever. I go on about how they're all fucking dupes of Hollywood. They're all trying to be creative. And I said, that's the worst thing we need today is creative people. So I rant on about that. That's a good one. Look it up, Susanna. Go to Dobbstown.com. Look up Bob Tor 08 or 07. And then it's Dobbs at some Italian name. It was the guy's gallery. That's an awesome performance. And you were having an argument with your sister today?
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Suzanne insulted her sister. What, tell us about that, Suzanne.
No, yeah. My mom insulted, was trying to insult her by saying, and me, by saying that we were both the same. And she was quite insulted. And I said, you should be flattered. I am great.
You said that to your sister.
That's a fabulous thing to be compared to me. She got more upset.
Was this on the phone or in person?
No, she's here visiting.
Right. So your mother got pissed off of both of you, insulted her.
Yes.
And you said, within the insulting world, that was a compliment, that you, sis, are compared to equal to me. That's pretty good.
You should be flattered. I am great.
And she's looking at you as a space cadet. She says, you're just a spinoff of Dobbs. That's what she should have said to you. You're just a Dobbsian wannabe. That's what she should have said to you, your sister.
No.
But she had no one else.
Totally thrown. You know, she was thrown into silence. She couldn't have, didn't even have a comeback.
I know. This is like Christmas. Everybody gets together and they tear each other apart. Why was your mother mad at you two? What was causing that?
Well, my mom can't hear really well. So I speak loudly to her. But then sometimes I speak more loudly because my sister and her husband were there, and it was just loud, and I didn't think she could hear me, so she thought I was yelling at her. And she gets very sensitive about my tone, and I'm just trying to enunciate and make sure she's understanding what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And she thinks I'm yelling at her and in with attitude. And it's not. And then she just kind of said, yeah, you all just, and then my sister does get flustered when my mom can't understand what she's saying. And she gets a little worked up. And so she just said, you both are the same. Like, we were both attacking her.
Typical family dynamics, Carol. This is what we avoided.
Oh, yeah.
We avoided this family bullshit. It's so ridiculous. Mm-hmm. They get together. Oh, it's so wonderful to have my sister back visiting us. You know, and that lasts about 3 minutes, and then it's all bullshit starts happening, right? her name? The sister looks at Suzanne says, Jesus Christ, you're overweight. You're fucking fat. You know, she probably says something like that after being there for 3 minutes.
But, yeah, it's pretty funny. That stuff doesn't get me. But so it just flusters her even more that I
come back with her and be like, I'm
that
not
was a good one. Yeah, there's no way she thinks that she's like you. She's way better than you, she thinks, right? Way better.
Yeah,
And for you to say, for you to look so aberrated that you think you're better than her, like, she didn't know how to come back to that. That's like, my. Suzanne is fucking nuts.
And she totally swallowed my mom's bait about, she was saying we're the same because she was inferring the bad part of me that gets on her nerves.
Yeah.
She's being just like me. I'm saying, I'm great. What are you talking about? You shouldn't be flattered. You're being compared to me.
So what happens after that? How does the mood change? Does everybody just forget they yelled at each other and then they're all like talking about cooking or something?
It just changes.
Everybody insults everybody. Everybody's wounded, and then they get talking about what they're going to have for dinner, and then everybody's happy again.
Exactly. But my sister's still a little moody. She stays like moody. It just goes all. You know, I just like let it slide off of me. But she's a little. I guess she can't get used to. She's always thought I was really bossy, but now I'm bossy with power. So that's really freaking her out.
Right. In other words, you're a little more accurate or something that she didn't expect.
Yes. I throw all my
siblings
off now because I'm too laid back, but yet they know, they kind of have a feeling that, you know, don't mess with me.
You got words they'd never heard before, or arguments, or sentences.
Yeah. It served me well. I mean, it's this. All of Connie's completeness formulas have served me so well.
Write a testimonial on that level. I whip my sisters in our family arguments. I always come out rosy on Christmas. That'd be a good testimonial. Do that, Susanna. You do it honestly. I won't say who it is.
That would be hilarious. There are so many stories. Gosh, yes.
It's not a would-be. Do it. Just do it. Write a couple of things. I'll post them. You watch, you get a lot of hits. Like, it'll go viral.
Well, an update on my mom. I need to do the other testimonial, and now I have another update. But guess what? She's taking magnesium Remag. I've got her taking, how much am I, she takes a half of a tablespoon and a half. So how much is that? Three-quarter teaspoon every day. And I'm trying to get her to take more.
On top of her Remag lotion.
On top of the Remag lotion, which she still doesn't know she's taking, but she's aware of the Remag. And this has happened because the last time we went to the doctor, she was supposed to have been taking something for her bones, that she takes once a week and just to sit still for an hour. I forget what it's called. But she stopped. She didn't want to do it because she just was tired of it. And I said, fine, don't take it. I supported her. And but her bone density was really good. And the doctor said she didn't need to take it. But then he realized, oh, no, you're supposed to be on it for 5 years, so you need to go back on it. And she didn't. She didn't want to do it. And I said, your bones are fine, so why take it? And so she had another bone density, and the doctor was a little upset that her density had gone down about 11%. And so he wanted to give her injections of Prolia. They call it an infusion. You only have it every 6 months, but it sounds horrible. It sounds like once you take it, you can't get off of it because then your bones revert to a worse condition than they were when you started taking it. And it has all sorts of side effects, like muscle pain and joint pain. And it's like, well, I don't want any. And she didn't want it. And so I said, don't do it. So it's between us that the doctor even wanted her to do it. And they kept, oh, my gosh, the insurance had to be cleared. But as soon as the insurance said, yes, she can have it, they were calling every day to make the appointment. And so she said, please tell them I'm not going to do it. And I said, I can tell them, no problem. I said, she's old. She's 91. She doesn't want to do it. She just doesn't want to do it. So just don't call anymore. So they stopped calling. But then I told her, I said, why don't you do this with the Remag? Let's just try this and see what happens. In the next bone scan, I bet you're going to be fine. I probably won't be here, but that's okay. Let's just try it. Well,
right.
She is sleeping better. It's been 2 months now, I think, since we started. And I make sure to give it to her in water, but she only takes one glass of water. It's like 12 ounces, but she drinks it all. And she doesn't drink a lot of water. I'm trying to figure out ways to have her drink more water, but baby steps. But she is sleeping better, and she had a problem with constipation, and I think that's part of the pain medicine that she takes, and that she's not had a problem with since she started taking the Remag. And I brought it up to her yesterday, this past week, saying, I asked her all the time, how are you doing? No, I'm fine, nothing. And she's always makes a big deal. I need to drink some orange juice. I need to take oranges because, you know, to make sure I don't have that problem. She's not been doing any of that. Oh, no, I'm fine. Well, Mom, don't you think it's a little coincidental that since you started taking this, you seem to be sleeping better and you're having no problem? Wow, really? You think? No. She doesn't want to accept it, but... But she's not fighting in the water.
She said, oh, really? And then she said, no?
No, she didn't say no. She kind of, I think it registered, but she didn't want to admit it that it was. But she's not fighting me now on the water with the Remag. She was like, right. She'd make a face.
She'd make her face?
She'd make a face like it was horrible, and it didn't taste anything. It was diluted enough that it wasn't really changing the taste. I go, does it taste? Do you taste anything? No, but I know it's in there. Is what you tell me. Oh, God.
You're saying she doesn't make a face anymore.
She doesn't make a face. She doesn't fight me with making a face or resisting when I say, okay, here, Mom, use your water in the morning.
And you're sneakily putting the Remag lotion on her. She didn't know about that.
No. Oh, and the whole thing about the Remag in the water is between us as well, because she doesn't want anyone else to know, nor do I, because then I'll get my siblings questioning, what is it that you're putting in her water? So.
You're surrounded by stupidity.
I am.
Yeah.
But I'm seeing the results slowly with my mom, so I don't know. I'm wondering.
On just 3/4 of a teaspoon a day, you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Can you get her to put some sea salt in the water, too, or will she accept that? Because sea salt in the water will actually take the taste away, and you can probably... Even more, you can probably start putting a whole teaspoon in.
Maybe I should just do, but she'll be able to taste the salt, wouldn't she?
Yeah, but you could say that's her minerals. It won't be like
right.
Sea salt. It's the water's so bland. You know, why don't we try this?
I might just do that and not tell her and raise the magnesium. So she'll think it's just the same, and she's actually getting more. I'm sneaky. Yeah. And then sometimes I'm wondering, why am I doing this? Because this means she'll live till 150. It's like... Yeah, and then I'm here with her. Do I really want that?
Terrible. Damn.
I'm that horrible, but no. Well...
No,
well,
you're working
know.
On her personality, basically. You're doing it so you'll be able to have a smoother life at home with her.
Yes, yes. Yes. Well, yeah. But I'm here with her, kind of with my life in limbo a little bit. So I'm wondering, is this to my best interest to do this? that's a passing thought, which I have to admit I have, but it'll all work out.
Just like with JW, it'll all work out.
Yeah, you can't fail.
Mm-mm. No.
So
anyway, that's my update on my mom.
That's a good update. Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Bert, I never played Ion explaining the first words on the first session before, right?
You've played a little bit of it.
Yeah, in my mind, there's like somehow something was public about it.
I think we spoke the words. I think we
read the words.
But not Ion.
You read the words, yeah.
Commented. Yeah,
that's what it was. You just read the transcript. You didn't.
And you posted on Dupes.
Play a recording.
Bob. You posted on Dupes years ago.
And then we read it one day or something, talked about it.
Yeah.
But the so that's pretty good hearing Ion explain it, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That was a good part of the.
Great fiction.
That was a real part of the story. What'd you say?
Great fiction of how he went off into all those different avenues of that street.
Yeah.
They were talking about.
He, good story maker. He creates very creative. Okay, so we're ready, Carol?
Uh-huh.
Okay, you guys, I guess we'll mute you in case you guys get impatient and make noises. Hope you find this interesting.
Oh, wait, one more thing. Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah. Carolyn, that's the reason I was asking about the Recalcia, because I want to integrate that into the water. And I have a bottle that's been sitting for a long time, and I just want to make sure it didn't turn or taste more potent or something that I could, or I'll get a new one.
Right. No, it should be fine, but we used to have, what was it, vanadium and boron in the Recalcia, and the vanadium, some of it was coming out of solution. So what you should do with the Recalcia you have, if it's an old bottle, pour it into a clear measuring cup and see if there's any precipitate. I have some of those bottles, and all I do is, you know, put it through a. Well, I just use paper toweling. We don't drink coffee, but you could put it through a coffee filter and just strain out
if there's
any minerals in the bottom. That's all.
Okay, I'll check as it is because I think I got that one when they first came out. So,
it is
one of the first ones. Okay.
Okay.
Great. Thank you. That's what I'll do.
You're welcome.
Yay.
Yeah. Now you're muted.
Yeah, now you'll be muted.
Okay.
Do you guys ever re-listen to the McLuhan stuff? Or you just hear it once? If you hear it.
All right, have you muted them?
No.
No, I've re-listened to them. I listen to them again, yeah. Because I listen to the whole show, especially when I don't listen, when I'm not participating.
Right, and that would be just one time. That'd be your first time on the archives. You don't do it twice in the archives.
Now you want people to do twice?
No.
Gee whiz.
No, I didn't say that. No. So you find you're learning?
I do, because I listen to the archives, and I like doing the archives, especially when I haven't listened to the first time. I rewind a lot to make sure I understood what was being said.
Yeah,
that's good.
That's the correct terminology. I rewind a lot. So I do listen to it more than once a lot of times because I'm trying to make sure I understand it.
Right. So you're learning a lot about McLuhan through this.
I am. This is interesting, the juxtaposition with this person who's writing and you're correcting a lot of times the thinking and what she's saying. So it's actually very informative that way. I'm finding I'm getting a lot more out of it than a lot of your other ways that you talk about McLuhan.
Right.
Well, it's a great book. That's part of it. It's
sounds
really,
like,
a good primer.
So the so Bert, do you hear in talking about McLuhan how he's a thinker that prepares the world for Ion? Can you hear that?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. I mean, that's the thing. That's what's fun about listening to you the 25 years ago, and then remembering all that you share with McLuhan talking and reading, is this whole idea about electricity, the whole how the electric environment changed us. And then
right.
Here, for him to see that back in the 1930s, and then to hear you expound on how that changed us, it really, I mean, he was way beyond. I mean, that's why a lot of people listen to him, and, well, read about him and think he was crazy, nuts then, and now people are just now, like Mark Stallman and all those guys on those groups, they're, you know, promoting this scholarship, but they really are still doing it from a book wise, and they're not even close to, I mean, like what